Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 28th of July, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Joe Canning, the Championship's all-time record scorer, has retired from intercounty hurling. More on that very, very shortly. We'll also get up to speed on a historic day for Team Ireland in Tokyo. Plus, we're live to West Cork ahead of what could be another huge result for Irish rowing.
Yeah, I just get the bus home, have the lunch and the supper then after that, and a game of Scrabble maybe. The lads are teaching me how to play that. I'm not great with words, so I'm learning new stuff all the time.
Plus, we'll have Nadine Doherty on ladies football, Aoife Murray on camogie, and Robbie Parr marks our card on the Galway races. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Tribute there from our producer Ronan Lawler for Joe Canning, who has announced his retirement from intercounty hurling. And in fact, the tributes have been flowing all day. So many people saying great things about Joe and playing some of those magnificent clips of him as well. I think he could have spent the whole day just watching some of those scores. To reflect on his career, we are joined by his All-Ireland winning manager, Micheál Donoghue. Micheál, look, I think it was a possibility that he was going to retire, but at the same time, it does feel like a bit of a surprise. Were you expecting it down in Galway?
Good evening, Marie. I'd say, you know, most people probably thought he could have, but, you know, when the news broke earlier today, I think every Galwegian was just so disappointed and sad that we won't see him in the maroon and white again. And but look, what service the man has given to Galway. You know, he's a once-in-a-generation player, a special talent, you know, the ability to create special moments and, you know, in big games when you need big players, he was always to the fore. And, you know, he always led by example. And, you know, every time he took to the field, you know, he set the standard and he was the standard in that group. And, you know, it was a pressurised place for him to be in, but, you know, he thrived in it. And, you know, the introduction you gave him there, you know, we have some unbelievable memories to take away from him, and you know, what a player he's been, and one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, he really is. And like those memories, as you know, as you said there, they were popping up on social media all day, some of the just unbelievable scores, and unbelievable scores when they really mattered as well, which are the really hard and rare ones to get. And everybody has a favourite one, or one I think that they, you know, play over and over again. I loved the goal in 2015 against Kilkenny, that long ball in, the way he collected it and buried it. I must have watched it 10 times today. What's your one?
I probably would have to go with the point in 17 in the semi-final against Tip to win the game for us. Such an iconic score, and I remember saying after the match that it was only somebody of his talent getting on the ball at that time, and you know, that pressurised moment in the game when the game was there to be won, you know, that's the player you wanted on the ball, and that's the one that'll live in my memory for a while.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that one. All right, what was he like to manage? Like, what? Tell me about him, because like we've seen him on the pitch, obviously, and you know we'd see him around a little bit, but you know, you don't. We have no idea what he was like, you know, in that environment, and when you were together, all those hard, tough nights when things were going good, when things weren't going good. What kind of a person was he to be around?
He's great company, and he's. You know, in a hurling context, he always sets the standard. And you know, when you talk about preparation, and you talk to young fellas today in coaching, you'd always try and encourage them to train as they play. And you know, he did exactly that, as did others. But you know, he set the standard. He set the bar that, you know, he trained every day like he was going out playing a game. So therefore, when he went out in the game, those simple things, those hard things came easy to him. And, you know, he always demanded more off everybody, you know, management included. But, you know, he was such a talisman in every team that he played with. But I think it's equally important to speak about Joe Canning, the person as well. You know, today, I'm currently out in the Aran Islands, and you know, coming out on the boat, and once I got on the island, everybody's just talking about it and what he's contributed to Galway hurling. But you also just remember Joe Canning, the person and the man that he is. You know, he's so humble. He comes from a great family. You know, there was never any you know, time constraints. He always gave so much to supporters, and I think he'll be remembered fondly for all of those attributes as well.
Yeah, he gave so much, as you said, like so many years, and you know, to the county, to the club, and turned up on the big days and turned up on the not so big days as well.
He did, yeah, he did, and that's a testament to him and just the talent that he was. And you know, that's what's special and unique about, you know, you look at any sport, be it soccer, rugby, you know, the big players always turn up in games, and Joe most certainly was one of our big players.
So look, we've seen him over the years evolve. Like, we knew from the off, when he burst onto the scene, before he burst onto the scene, that there was a special talent coming through. Actually, just first of all, I mean, when were you aware in Galway, I guess, that there was somebody with such prestigious talent coming through?
I think it was very evident from his juvenile days playing, you know, under 12, 14, 16 in Galway. You know, there was always talk about a particular player, Joe Canning, from Portumna. You know, he came from a family steeped in hurling tradition. All his brothers played and to a high level as well. And yes, the youngest of them all was going to be the greatest of them all. So from a very early age, he had that pressure on him, you know, because the expectation was there. You know, he delivered it in spades for his club, Portumna, winning, you know, numerous county titles and All-Ireland titles, and, you know, underage with Galway. I was involved with Galway under-21s from 2005 to 7, and as an 18-year-old, he came on, I think, at half. We were trying to start him. He came on at half-time in a game up in Tullamore, and he nearly swung it for us. You know, that's how evident it was from such an early age that the talent that he was. And you know, he has had an unbelievable career, and you know, he's won every accolade in the game, and everything that's been said about him today, he deserves every bit of it.
So as a manager, how do you manage somebody like that, somebody that is capable of such great things, is your star player, can win matches for you, but at the same time is going to be the marked man?
Like, in fairness, and he'd be the first to admit it, like, you know, he never got any preferential treatment. He never looked for any preferential treatment. He was always just one of the team and the squad. But, you know, from a management's perspective, you know, when you want players to lead by example, set the standard, set the tone, always question and ask of others, and, you know, take responsibility and accountability, he was always to the forefront for himself and for others. So, you know, he was a great aide for any manager that was over him.
Tell us how he evolved, because, you know, we saw him as he got a little bit older. Look, the body does change as you get a little bit older, and you don't have that speed and that sharpness. But he evolved himself as a player, and, you know, I've heard so many people say today that played against him that trying to mark somebody that had his work rate, had his vision, had his ability to win the ball, and also the ability to bring players into the game with his distribution.
Yeah, but if you wanted a prototype, Marie, of a player, you know, he was, you know, he would be one of a selected few that you'd go and choose. He had everything in the game. You know, he started inside in the full forward line, you know, was absolutely lethal in there. You know, over the years, he's come out, became a playmaker, not saying that he wasn't, you know, throwing the ball around as a young player, but he was just so adaptable in any position. And, you know, his movement off the ball, you know, you could start him centre forward, but yet he could play right across the half forward line or even play deeper. He was very comfortable just finding himself in a position and being able to perform in that position, which made him a very dangerous player to mark. Yeah. And I think it's really worth noting as well the injuries that he sustained over the last number of years, the surgeries that he's had, you know, the recoveries, you know, his own discipline, his own application and huge desire to get back every time was just testament to his desire to play for his club and for Galway.
And he inspired so many people as well, like just generations of hurlers, really, because he has been on the scene for so long.
Yeah, totally. And I think that was just evident, so evident every day. You'd play a match no matter where it was. You know, he was always the last fella in the dressing room or the last player to come into the dressing room because of, you know, the demand of young fellas looking for autographs and pictures. And, you know, that's testament to him, you know, but he always afforded everybody the same time. And, you know, he's always the last lad in the changing room because of his popularity. And, you know, that was just great to see as well.
He coped with the pressures so well as well, because I guess anytime we're talking about Galway over the years, the first name that you talk about when you're previewing a game is Joe Canning and how important he is, and almost is he too important?
I think he just carried so much expectation. You know, we're a sport mad county that, you know, we long for our success, and, you know, on the hurling side, it was, you know, a 29-year famine, and, you know, every year, you know, the expectation for Galway to succeed was very dependent on Joe some years, you know, and like he, you know, even to the clips he had at the start of the show, you know, you could, you know, I seen a tweet today, Lake or Gale, when they do a show and it would be about 10 hours long because of all the quality stuff that he did, like, so, you know, he carried it well, and there was huge expectation on him, you know, in Galway, every day he went out, and particularly hard days, but, you know, testament to him, and that's the sign of a great player. You know, he had some unbelievable performances in that maroon and white jersey, and I think that's the biggest disappointment today. We're just not going to see him in that one again.
Do you think it's the right time for him to go?
Well, ultimately, it's his decision. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And we have to totally respect that. I think he's put up with a lot of injuries over the last few years, and they are very taxing, and, you know, you've seen maybe players in other sports that have had comparable injuries had to retire. So that'll just give you an indication of the severity of them. And, you know, he's come back from them. But ultimately, that does take a huge toll on the body. And, you know, I've seen an interview he did this morning where, you know, even the build-up to the Waterford game and around the Dublin game, you know, he was picking up a lot of niggles. So knowing him, I don't think it was a decision he'd have taken very likely. You know, he would have given us huge, huge thought, I would imagine, over a long period of time. So I totally respect that for him, and, you know, have nothing but huge respect for him, and wish him all the best in the future.
Yeah, well, we're getting loads of lovely texts in. They're flooding in here. No surprise, really. We've one listener who's nearly in tears listening to us talking about Joe. Another one says that it's one of those moments that they're never going to forget, the moment when Joe Canning retired. This is from John in Galway. He remembers where he was when Elvis died. He remembers where he was when Diana passed away. And now he's never going to forget where he was when he heard that Joe Canning retired. So he's devastated. Yeah. So there is a lot of devastated people. I think, look, probably because he's still going so well, like, that's the thing, you know, you can still see a role for him.
Yeah, I think so, and I'd have no doubt if he continue to wear the Galway jersey, that, you know, he would have put in huge performances. But, you know, he obviously felt the time was right. And, you know, it's gas to see all the comments today. He's not going anywhere. He's not gone anywhere. You know, he's still alive and well. And, you know, the people in Galway will be really looking forward to seeing him in playing for his club. But we just have to respect his decision now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it, like, it's funny reading the quotes from him today. Like, he's already talking about having league game next Monday, training Friday. Like, you know that what he's given for Galway, he's going to still keep giving for his club.
He will, of course. And, you know, you see sometimes when county teams get bet, and it's hard for the club player to go back to the club. You know, it's a down period because, you know, it's just so disappointed from losing a big game. But knowing Joe, he will be back there Monday night training with the club and leading them by example every day he's there.
So just for yourself, look, obviously you know him so well, and you did have that unbelievable experience of winning an All-Ireland. When you think of Joe Canning now, you know, scores aside, maybe just on the experiences, like what stands out in your mind about him?
Look, I've been very fortunate to work with him, and I think anyone that has the same, he's so approachable, he's so humble, he's so, you know, sometimes his persona on the field is totally different to, you know, to the man that he actually is. You know, it's very easy to meet him anywhere and have a cup of tea or have a drink or socialise with him. You know, he's very easy to get on with, and, you know, it's just a sad day for Galway. Like, you know, to think that he's not going to be there, what he's given to the county is just totally unmeasurable, and he will be missed in it. But, you know, the thing is, life goes on, and it'll be back on the bike again next year.
That's the thing. Now, there are, as I said, tributes flowing in. Here's a story from JP McManus, Micheál, about when he met Joe in 2018.
I must tell you a story. Last year, I or maybe it was the year before, I can't remember, but I met him, and he went to the car, and he gave Noreen and myself a present of a hurley. He said, "You'll have better memories of this hurley than I have." So, it was very kind of Joe. I appreciate having it, and it has pride of place in my home.
Now, that was just on the racing coverage from the Galway Races, Micheál. So I'll just, it just tells you how far the reach is. They're talking about him in different sports as well today, because he's just left such an impact on so many people.
He has, but I think, you know, that's the beauty about sport and the appreciation of sport, is that, you know, a talented player like Joe is recognised, you know, across the sporting world. And, you know, what an unbelievable statement from JP. But, you know, equally, you know, you could have rang Joe any time and asked him to go and see a sick kid in hospital, or, you know, anything in that regard, any time. And, you know, if you said to be there at 4 o'clock, he would have been mm-hmm. there. And, you know, the amount of that kind of work and that kind of support he's given people, you know, I'm sure there's endless stories that people can tell, and that's testament to the man that he is as well.
Yeah, and you know what, when I think of Joe Canning, the one image that sticks with me, which probably says so much about him as well, is when he went over to his parents at the end of the All-Ireland final, and that just amazing picture, the mom and the dad looking at him with just pure love and joy.
Yeah, and he's such a family man, but I think if he was on the phone now, he'll tell you that I think in some of those pictures, it wasn't his dad that was actually in. But yeah, like he a huge family person that was really evident in every game. You know, they were always there to support him, and, you know, any time he had success or after any game, you know, you always want to go to see your family, and that's where Joe always made his beeline to first, and that's a lovely quality to have.
Yeah, it really is. Look, Micheál Donnelly, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure we'll see more of Joe anyway in the club colours over the next God knows how long, because he does look like he could be playing for quite a while, but he definitely has given us so many great days, so many great memories, and inspired many, many hurlers. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It was another busy day in the world of the Olympic Games. And to round up the action from day five, here's Damien O'Mara in Tokyo.
Game On Olympic Update with Circle K. Cheering Team Ireland on with you all over the country. Circle K, proud partner of the Irish Olympic team.
And so the curtain comes down on day five of the Tokyo Games, one which brought with it a first medal for Ireland, just the 32nd in the country's 22 participations at the Summer Games. And history for Emily Hegarty, Afric Kyo, Emer Lam and Fiona Murta, who became the first women's rowing crew to win a medal for Ireland, as the sport now joins boxing in being the only two disciplines to win medals at successive games. The women's four recovered from a slow start, finishing strongly to beat Great Britain to bronze as Australia took gold ahead of the Netherlands in second place. We'll hear from the medal winners shortly, but first the culmination of the race as called home by George Hamilton.
Australia leading, the world champions leading home, the European champions in second place, but Ireland are going for bronze as they drive forward, leaving the British boat behind. Australia under pressure from the Netherlands for the gold, but Ireland in the bronze medal position, and history is about to be made. Australia driving for the line, second place Netherlands, and in third place it's Ireland. But Australia win it, Netherlands second, and Ireland are home for third and a bronze, and history is made as the Irish women's four take the bronze medal at the Olympic Games.
Afric, you're here with your medals around your neck. Can you sum up to us what it feels like and what it means to have that around your neck?
I think it just means the world to us, and I think it's just, like, I know none of our families and friends are here, but the amount of support we've gotten for them and to have something for them to cheer and be excited about is just unreal. And the amount of work that the four of us and the rest of the team have put in has just been phenomenal. So we're just delighted to come away with a medal after all that hard work. And especially in these conditions today, like, they're very tricky conditions. A lot of favourites are missing out on medals. So I think we're quite lucky to have come down the track without anything majorly going wrong.
And Emer, I know that watching on back home, your sister Claire, she got into a final with Sinead back in Rio, and your parents were there for that. I'm sure you really wish they could be here with you now.
Oh yeah, definitely. But like, even though they can't be, you can definitely feel the support, even if it's the other side of the world. Like, my phone's been hopping, like, my whole road, the old Cabra Road, like, they've all been putting up posters, banners, bunting, like, even though, like, they're miles and miles and miles away, it feels, you can feel them, like, you can feel the support.
Fiona, where does this bond come from? How did you gel together so well?
Like, through lockdown and everything, we just had so many moments and just a lot of work. It's been a long 18 months together, but, you know, we keep each other good company, we're lighthearted, good crack, and yeah, it's just really memorable, and we'll look back on this for the rest of our lives.
And Emily, you're the baby of the group from Skibbereen. There's definitely something in the water down there.
As the saying goes. No, I think it's really exciting, you know, that only 5 years later there's a women's cruise medal and a heavyweight cruise. So I think it's really, really exciting for all the youngsters in Skib coming up, that, like, there's no limits. And like, 5 years ago I definitely didn't think I'd be here with a medal around my neck, but it's definitely going to give a massive boost to home and give all those young guys coming up a bit of belief, and boys and girls, like, hopefully there'll be more medals out of the weeks.
The men's lightweight double scull of Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy will be hoping to emulate their teammates and become medal winners tomorrow. They dominated their semi-final today, again finishing strongly to comfortably beat Italy and Belgium.
It's not easy at all. I mean, there's somewhat tricky conditions, you know. There's a big breeze blowing, and we saw that the Norwegians, I think, fell out in the race before us. You know, we missed those boys in the final. They're always strong contenders. But I think we were rowing well in ourselves, so we're pleased enough with that.
Another strong and steady and calm performance, Fintan.
Yeah, it felt pretty good. There's a few wobbles down the course, but yeah, looking forward to tomorrow now.
And do you feel the expectation or the pressure, Fintan?
Not too much, really. Like, once we're down here, it kind of just feels like any other regatta, really. So we just try and do what we know how to do, and hopefully if we put in our best, then we'll have a good performance.
Philip Doyle and Ronan Byrne have finished 10th overall in the men's double sculls. They finished 4th in the B final earlier. Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin will go in the lightweight double sculls B final after finishing 5th in their semi final, while Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarska finished 5th in the women's pair semi finals and will also compete in the B final. Now to boxing, where Kurt Walker pulled off one of the results of the competition so far, beating the reigning Uzbek world champion on a split decision to advance to the quarterfinals of the men's featherweight division. It means a win in his next bout will assure him of at least a bronze medal from the Games. Unfortunately, there was defeat for Aoife O'Rourke in the preliminary round of the women's middleweight, where she was beaten on a unanimous decision by China's Quang Li.
Delighted with how I performed. I put on the pressure. I knew that's what I'd have to do against her. She's a very skillful boxer. Just wasn't to be today for me, so I wish her the best of luck for the rest of the competition.
You were aggressive from the very start. That was obviously the game plan.
Yeah, that was the plan, and I tried my best to listen to the coaches. But that's what I can do great, is put on the pressure, but it just wasn't enough today. I'm very, very lucky and delighted that I got this far. My goal was to go and compete in Paris at the qualifiers, and I qualified there, and to get this far was an amazing achievement for me, and I'm looking forward to what comes next.
You're 24 years of age. 6 years ago you were an 18-year-old Gaelic footballer who walked into a boxing gym. It's a hell of an achievement in 6 years to reach an Olympic Games.
Yeah, it just shows you though, if you want it enough and you're willing to commit and dedicate time to something, that it'll pay off, so I'm delighted.
And a day after she competed in the final of the women's 100 metres breaststroke, Mona McSharry was back in the pool, where she set a new record in the 200 metres breaststroke. Her time of 2 minutes 25.08 saw her finish second in the heat. It did, however, leave her in 20th place overall, with the top 16 advancing.
You know, that's my first PB of the meet, so of course I'm happy with that. I was just happy to race, and I don't think I've seen myself smile that much walking out to a race in a long time, so I think that's just a plus to take from it, and you know, showing me all the support that I have behind me as well. And thank you to everyone for all that support. But it's just great. It's a great experience.
Are you looking forward to going home as well?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely excited for a little bit of a break. I don't have too long. I'm back in college on the 20 something of August, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing my friends and family and just having a little bit of reunion. Even just being done racing and getting to experience a little bit more of Olympic Village life will be great as well. So yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff to come.
Nat Nguyen has been knocked out of the men's badminton despite a compelling encounter against the Chinese Taipei's Wang. Wang was expected to comfortably win the match. She took the opening game 21-12. Nat battled back to win the second 21-18 before Wang then took control in the third, winning 21-12.
This is the level I want to compete at in the future, and I feel the next couple of Olympics when I will be more physically stronger and more experienced and more... Yeah, just more like all-round as a player. We'll develop more in the next couple of Olympics. So I definitely will use this experience and this this game to move on and to improve and look forward to the future, yeah.
And just a word on the support that has got you to this stage. And yeah. I know particularly your parents have been particularly supportive.
Yeah, throughout the third set, I was thinking I just wanted to fight for every support that I've had. And it's overwhelming, the support that I've had in the last couple of weeks here. And I just want to say a special shout out to everyone that's been supporting me. And I will keep moving on and pushing forward. This is only the start, so I'm happy. Yeah.
Ireland have fallen to a second defeat in the women's hockey tournament. They trailed Germany by 2-0 at half-time in their Group A game earlier. They were 3-0 down heading towards the end of the third quarter before goals from Lena Tice and Hannah McLaughlin got Ireland back into the game. Germany scored a fourth late on to see the fixture out. It means with 3 points from three games, Ireland are fourth in the pool with 2 games left to play, and they face India next, who are yet to register a point in the competition. Megan Fletcher's Olympic debut ended in defeat in the 70-kilo category in judo. She was agonisingly beaten in the final seconds of her bout with Austria's Michaela Palares. At his fourth Olympic Games, Nicholas Roach finished 28th in cycling's time trial. He was over 6 minutes down on the eventual gold medal winner, Primoz Roglic. Derek Burnett, at his fifth Games, had a difficult day in the men's trap shooting. He shot a total of 70 from 75 targets, and a sign of how competitive the competition is, that leaves him 25th out of the 29 competitors. A top six finish after two more rounds of qualifying tomorrow is what's required to advance to the final, so that's unlikely to happen at this stage. Ireland's sevens ended a disappointing campaign with defeat to Kenya in the ninth place playoff. They had beaten the Kenyans 12-7 yesterday but fell to a 22-0 defeat today. Robert Dixon and Sean Wadilove finished 12th in the second race of sailing's 49er class. An 11th place in race 3 and 13th in race 4 leaves them in 11th place overall. They had led after yesterday's opening race. And away from the Irish, the story which dominated here in Tokyo was Simone Biles, whose withdrawal from the women's all-round gymnastics final was confirmed by USA Gymnastics. She pulled out of yesterday's team final, citing mental health concerns. It's not yet clear if she'll compete in her individual finals, which are due to take place next week. And so ends a day which saw Ireland compete across 10 sports, with Emily Hegarty, Afric Kyo, Emer Lam and Fiona Murta the toast of Team Ireland as they secured bronze in rowing's women's four.
Now, the toast of Team Ireland indeed. Kieran McCarthy, the sports editor of the Southern Star, joins us now on the line. Kieran, you must be exhausted from watching rowing and celebrating Ireland's very first medal.
It's incredible, Marie. It's absolutely incredible to see what's gone on the last couple of nights, to see that women's four win that bronze last night. It's a flag in the ground moment, I think, for Irish women's rowing. It's the first ever rowing medal won by an Irish women's crew. And if you think back to 2016, the effect that Gary and Paul's silver medal had on the whole sport in Ireland, it's been widely acclaimed as transforming the sport. Like, I think what this bronze medal will do, it's definitely going to be a huge boost for women's rowing in Ireland, because these four terrific women, and in fairness, they're spread from three different corners of the country. We've some terrific role models and ambassadors for the sport now. So exciting times, I think, for women's rowing after this.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. It actually feels like a movement almost, you know.
100%, because, like I said, I keep thinking back to what Gary and Paul achieved, and it did have a huge transformative effect on Irish rowing. And now we've an Irish women's crew winning a medal at an Olympics, and we've two rowers from Galway, we've Emer Lam from Dublin, and we've Emily Hegarty from West Cork. So, like I said, geographically they're spread all around the country, which I think is helpful as well, because it's going to inspire young girls in all parts of Ireland to get involved in the sport, because they can see now what hard work, commitment, talent and drive can give you, because there's a path there now. There's a path from West Cork to the podium in an Olympics. That's the same in Dublin. That's the same for girls up in Galway. They've seen what Afric Kyo and Fiona Murta have done, how they've competed with the very best in the world, held their own, and they've come home now with a physical, tangible medal to show everyone. So I'm fiercely excited for what's going to come next.
Yeah, I can just imagine now how many trips those medals are going to go on right around the country, how many young girls are going to see them, and how many of them are going to be encouraged and inspired to get in a boat. And look, as you said as well, you know, we are a country that is getting really good at rowing, so it's the perfect time to get involved, and you would hope that we're going to get even better when the two lads, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, get into the boat for their final tonight. As you tweeted yourself, if their semi-final was a sign of things to come, we are in for a treat.
Oh, they were absolutely awesome in their semi-final. They set a world best time in winning their AB semi-final, and they were 2 seconds ahead of Italy. Like, for the two lads, for Paul and Fintan to go out and do that on the big stage, and with the pressure and expectation that's on these two Skibbereen men, we all know, Marie, that they're world champions, they're European champions, they were the favourites for gold heading over to Tokyo. They were unbackable with the bookies. Everything was saying Fintan and Paul are going to win gold. But we all know if sport was that easy, we'd all be at it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if anything can go wrong, but so far, touch wood and cross your fingers, everything is gone according to plan. They won their heat last weekend, they won their semi-final early this morning, and they won it by 2 clear seconds as well. It's just all setting us up for something very, very special. This could be a really, really one of those kind of where were you moments at 1:50 a.m. tomorrow morning, because what Paul and Fintan they give me goosebumps, to be quite honest. When I saw what they did last night and to think who we're up against in the final, if everything goes according to plan, we're on the cusp of something very, very special here.
Okay, so set the scene for us. Who do they need to watch out for? Who are their challengers, if there are any?
We're probably talking about the Italians and the Germans. The Norwegians would have been challengers too, but the Norwegians capsized in their semi-final early this morning, so they're out of it. And that just shows the danger that is there. Obviously, Paul and Fintan are the class acts in the field, and if everything goes according to plan, they should win. but we saw what happened to the Norwegians early this morning. So until Paula Finton crossed that line in first place, we just can't be sure, because the course over, it's a lot choppier than we actually see on TV. I was talking to the Ireland Women's Four today, and they watched back their final, and they were even surprised that the conditions didn't even come across properly on TV. They said there was a fierce crosswind there. A lot of favourites were getting kind of, they weren't advancing in various races. So if everything goes according to plan, it should be Paul and Finton. They're in lane three. On either side of them are the Italians and the Germans. And it's probably between those three crews for the other medals. You also have the Czech Republic, Uruguay and Belgium. But I think it's going to come down to lanes 2, 3 and 4. So we saw in the semi-final early this morning, Italy went out first. They got ahead of Paul and Finton. But in the second 500 metres, the lads clawed them back, pushed past them and then surged away. So the German crew, they won the other semi-final, but their time was still 2 seconds slower than what Paul and Finton achieved. So, like I said, Marie, I'm getting quite excited, but we can't count any chickens until we see what happens, what unfolds in the early hours of the morning.
Right, 1:50 a.m. Is that what time we need to set our clocks for?
1:50 a.m. Yeah, we have a couple of B finals before that, so it could be actually a night. Just don't bother going to sleep; just stay up through the night.
Right. Well, I'm going to take my advice from you, because you've been doing it all week. Kieran McCarthy, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break now, and then Robbie Parr is going to join us to talk Galway races.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on racing.
Late as they turn towards home, there's a line of four giving chase. It's Modus on the near side, Kashari the far. Easy Game is coming through in the centre. It's a long way home now for Royal Rendezvous. He still has a length and a half lead, but Easy Game is closing in down. But Royal Rendezvous is picking up again, and inside the shadow of the post, it is Royal Rendezvous, second last year. He goes one better. Royal Rendezvous has won the top plate for Paul Townend and Willie Mullins. Easy Game is second, being followed in by Modus, the Shunter and Durasso.
Now, Robbie Parr joins us on the line there. We just saw Royal Rendezvous win for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. I have to say that the two of them looked very happy.
They did, yeah. I think Willie even more so. He actually tipped Royal Rendezvous up before the race as his best chance. So he doesn't often get it right with the multiple runners he has in a race. So Willie seemed equally chuffed on TV after the race. But a good performance, and class came to the fore in this year's Galway Plate. You know, three of the first four home were over 11 stone, so the better horses came to the fore, and Royal Rendezvous, it's not often you see an all the way winner of a Galway Plate.
Ted put it quite well afterwards. He said, horses for courses. Royal Rendezvous knew that first was on the cards, came back last year after finishing second, and was determined to get that win.
Yeah, exactly, and Galway more so than anywhere else is where horses for courses come to the fore, and as Royal Rendezvous was probably a shade unlucky last year. He made a bad mistake in the dip and finished second. But compensation for Willie and his owners and Paul Townend this year.
Yeah, look, I think it's a tough time for the Galway races, because we don't have the fans and the festival feel that we usually have. But it is still going on. It's on the television, which is great to see. And actually, when that race finished, you could get a sense that there was a bit of an atmosphere there, which was brilliant. So look, we do have another day tomorrow, and the hurdle is going to take centre stage. How do you see that going?
Yeah, the hurdle is a fascinating race tomorrow. You could make a case for a number of horses in it. I like Cape Gentleman of Emmett Mullins's. I think he's a Grade 2 winner. He won in Kempton last year, Grade 2 novice hurdle. He's a horse on the improve. He has to go right-handed. Any of his runs, disappointingly, have been left-handed. So going right-handed around Galway will definitely suit him. He's a horse with plenty of class. And he's a horse that I think will take a lot of beating in the race. You know, you're always looking for an improver in a race like this that has a little bit under his sleeve, and Cape Gentleman is that. He's a novice, improving novice, so he's the one for me. I think he takes a lot of beat.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping an eye out for that one. And look, there was a little bit of controversy yesterday as well, Robbie, with Jessica Harrington. She saw her winner, the 2-year-old filly's maiden at Galway, disqualified due to a case of mistaken identity.
Yeah, it's a very, very unfortunate incident, and I've worked with Jessica Harrington for 20 years, and nobody will be more embarrassed over the incident than Jessie herself or her team. You know, it's just one of these very, very unfortunate things, but also a thing that in this day and age I don't think needs to happen. When horses arrive at the race courses, they all get scanned, their microchip, to make sure it's the right horse at the races. The IHRB are trying to police the sport properly, I think to police the sport properly, you have to have the right, make sure the right participants are taking part in the sport for a start. So why horses aren't microchipped, checked before they go into the prizing, this is something that has to be done. We all get, as jockeys, we get weighed in and out, we get checked to make sure we have the right colours on. The jockeys are being checked, surely the horses should be checked to make sure that we have the right horses in the race.
Is it just human error? Is that how something like that happens?
It is, and when you have human error involved, there's always something. This has happened before. It happened to Aidan O'Brien in Newmarket last year when he put the wrong saddle on two horses. You're talking two of the most professional, best run outfits in the game in Jessica Harrington and Aidan O'Brien, and it's happened to them. Mm. If it's happened to them, it can happen to anybody, and it is human error. It's unfortunate, but I think this is something that's very easily fixed by the IHRB, where a horse has to be scanned for his microchip before he enters the prize ring, the same as a jockey has to weigh out with the right colours on and the right weight before the horse is saddled.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. All right, and just yourself, Robbie, I saw that you had back surgery. How are you doing? Are you recovering okay?
Yes, it's a bit hard to recover when you're watching Galway on the telly. You'd rather be there, so. But the operation went very well. Mr. Nagaria, my back surgeon, was very happy with the way things went in the Beacon Hospital on Monday. So, he's given me a sort of a 6-week period as a time to recover. I'm aiming for the Harvest Festival in the Stole, and that sort of gives me 7 or 8 weeks, I think it is, till the Stole. So that's what I'm aiming for, and fingers crossed everything goes well and we'll be back in action shortly.
So have you just to lie down now in the back and watch the races?
Yeah, try. 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of the recovery are the most important. Basically short walks every day and mainly lying or sitting for the majority of the day. So that's what the first 2 weeks entail, and then I go back to see Mr. Nagaria and hopefully he'll give me the all clear to start doing some more exercise. But the first 2 weeks of the recovery are the most important, and we'll try and do what I'm told. I'm not very good at doing what I'm told, but try and do what I'm told.
Well, for your sake, Robbie, I hope that the sun doesn't come back out, that it stays raining for the next few weeks and you won't feel as bad. Best of luck with the recovery, and we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break, and then it's women's football in Camogie.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to women's football, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by former Donegal player Nadine Doherty. Nadine, this time last week we were knee deep in permutations trying to figure out who was going to be playing who in the quarterfinals. Well, now we know we have our four fixtures: Donegal versus Dublin, Meath versus Armagh, Cork versus Waterford, and Galway will play Mayo. So I think we should probably start with Dublin and Donegal, Nadine, just because we know from past experience that Donegal have been a bit of an Achilles heel for Dublin in recent years. There's very little between them, even though Dublin are obviously the dominant team. Donegal are well able to put it up to them.
Yeah, Marie, listen, you know, Donegal are going into this game obviously as massive underdogs. I think that will suit them. They don't really carry the favourites tag well. Dublin have been phenomenal this season, you know, and you know, we discuss them every week deservedly. They're the heavy favourites for 5 in a row and what a team. But as you said, look, I think a lot of people would feel that if anybody is to beat this Dublin team, I think it could be Donegal. As you said, they found it really difficult against Donegal over the last few years. And if you look back to league matches, championship matches, and even challenge games, which you'd kind of hear about, you know, on the lowdown, there hasn't been much between them. And look, last year's game, Dublin needed that random lucky goal of Sinead Hearn to get them over the line. And I think Donegal will have that drive in them on, you know, knowing that that's what it came down to. As well, you know, if you look at this year, add to Donegal, they've played really intense and difficult matches. Contrast that with Dublin. Have they been tested really, you know, the two Cork games perhaps in the league? But, you know, Donegal having that little bit of momentum and the tough games behind them will be a boost. I think tactically it'll be intriguing. Will Donegal adopt the Tyrone tactics and go a little bit defensive? Or will they stick to their own guns and implement that high press on the kick-out that has worked so well for them this year? But look, Marie, when you look at it, you can't back anything but a Dublin win, and in fairness to them, they're still my clear favourites for the All-Ireland. But with Donegal, you just never know. And I think if Donegal are to do it, it would probably be Donegal's greatest win ever. in ladies football, and I'll tell you, if they do it, you might have to get somebody to cover for me next week, because I'll be gone for a few days celebrating, that's for sure.
Yeah, look, it would be a shock, all right, and probably likewise with Cork against Waterford as well. You would think that Cork are going to run out winners there.
Yeah, you know, I think Donegal bring more to the table than Waterford, with all due respect to Waterford. But again, look, they go into the game with abandon. There's no pressure on them whatsoever. The McGraths and the Murrays, you know, they had a great game at the weekend against Tyrone. They didn't panic. They had great composure. Cork, I suppose, like Donegal, they have been tested a few times this year, twice against Dublin and, of course, against Meath in round one. They were really shook. In saying that, I fully expect them to win. It'll just be interesting to see, especially what forward line perhaps they line out with, because of injury and different things. They haven't had a steady forward line this year. And I think what we possibly see at the weekend, we might see from Cork going forward in the Championship. But look, they should progress, but they won't have it all their own way. And I do think Waterford will challenge them, as they always do, you know, by playing to their strength. Mm-hmm.
Meath and Armagh is an absolutely fascinating one. Meath are still going. Another unbelievable performance last weekend. And I think, look, the two teams are not very familiar with each other at all. They haven't met competitively in recent years, but that'll probably work to Meath's advantage, because they'll have absolutely no fear going in playing Armagh.
Yeah, Marie, I think along with the Donegal-Dublin game, this is the game to watch. Neither team have met competitively, but ironically, I actually see them as two similar enough teams in how they're coached and even how they operate tactically. You know, they use width and they use numbers around the middle and utilise their brilliant full forward lines. Both extremely well-coached teams. Armagh will be hoping for Carlene O'Hanlon to be fit. She took an awful knock there in a clash with Rachel Cairns. So they'll 100% need her. They need Amy Mackin. You know, she was amazing again at the weekend, what, 3-5, 3-6. And Emma Troy from Meath, who was one player of the game the last few days, I think she'll have to defend this weekend. I think it's going to be massive. For me, I'm ever so slightly going to favour Meath, because I just feel they have a slightly more balanced team. And I think they play with an intensity that Armagh haven't experienced yet this season. Mm-hmm. And plus for me, Meath have Emma Duggan, who for me is one of the players of the Championship so far this year.
Yeah, Meath are really just shown how what you can do when you put your mind to it and you build up from the grassroots and go through the different divisions as well. It's just brilliant for them to see. So Galway and Mayo then is our fourth game, and it's hard to know how this one's going to go.
I don't think so, Marie. It's not hard for me. I just see two teams in very different places. Mayo did nothing for me at the weekend against Armagh. I'm not sure what's going on there. You know, I feel they're lacking leadership at the minute. And I just look at Galway. They're coming into this game with huge confidence, having totally left behind a poor league campaign. They've had two excellent results, a surprising one against Donegal, a solid one against Kerry. And then you look at the Mayo team, and I just think they stuttered through that group. And as I said, against Armagh, there just didn't seem to be any appetite to win. I think they've huge problems on the kickouts. I think they've problems defensively. And I just see that Galway team as having far too much pace and quality all over the pitch. And I just see Galway as being more settled at the minute and organised. And I think they will exploit Mayo's weaknesses and get the upper hand.
Okay, well, Nadine, I still can't believe we're at this stage of the Championship,
know,
but we are where we are, and we will know our semi-finalists very, very shortly as well. Thanks so much, Nadine. Now it is time to talk Camogie, and Aoife Murray is with us. Aoife, a really busy weekend of Camogie action as well, just gone by. A lot of it went to script, but I think when you look at Dublin losing to Waterford, that's probably one that people weren't expecting.
Yeah, well, it was certainly not by the scoreline, only scoring 9 points and conceding 217. I think people possibly weren't expecting that, but and it's two teams in quite a contrasting place, where you had Dublin coming out of the league really positive in winning that last game against Waterford. Waterford looked like they had a really poor campaign in the league, but they've really turned it around from Championship. So obviously all those defeats, they've been really learning from them. Mm-hmm. And I think you can certainly see that in their first performance, in particularly this weekend. I think they were far more critical. And for me, I suppose there's a lot of questions maybe going on in that Dublin camp right now. I know they have a new management, but there's a few sloppy mistakes constantly in defence. You saw it against Offaly in the league, and you saw something quite similar this weekend, which is quite disappointing. However, Waterford, they punish any mistake there. And listen, they're going in this weekend to top the group.
Yeah, it's It's crazy as well that we're at this stage of the championship as well. It's flying by. So when we go to this weekend's games, we're really looking at who is going to come out on top. And when you just look back at last weekend's, who are the teams that impressed you?
For me, I think in fairness, how Down set up against Cork, Marie, I thought they went there to compete, albeit in a defensive manner. They tried to keep that scoreline down. And to me, it showed a huge amount of know-how regarding the senior level. So they still impressed me, I have to say. Clare also. I thought Clare did a great job at the weekend and are certainly showing kind of green shoots with regard to maybe next year. This year might be just one step too far with regard to going to that semi-final spot. But certainly, I think they're showing great signs maybe for next year, and I hope they keep it going, especially Chloe Morley. She's coming back to her best, isn't she, really?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to see it because she was such a talent, and I think she had a great interview as well, just how she spoke about COVID and taking the positives out of it. So for me, those teams, and Westmead, in fairness, Westmead, you know, coming up to senior level, you could have been forgiven for thinking that they might get beaten comprehensively, but I think they've fought well so far. So yeah, they're the three teams I think that have stood out for me.
And what about Tipperary? Look, we know that they are trying to get a little bit further this year than they have in the past, to maybe to join that very, very top table. Do you think that they have improved enough this season so far?
Yeah, I certainly think they're going in the right direction, and I think their manager Bill said something quite important after the game with regard to 60 minutes of consistency, and I think they're getting closer, Marie, to that 60 minutes. Obviously, to see the year out, they're going to have to be consistent over 65 plus minutes. I think they might just fall short a little bit this year, but they're definitely moving in the right direction. And if they can keep this momentum going and getting to those 60, 65 minutes of consistency, they certainly have the players to do it, Marie. And I think it would be great for the game if they could break that semi-final ceiling and get themselves into that last game of the year.
Really well. Aoife Murray, as always, thank you so much for joining us. And sorry, we're so short on time today. We will have lots more time next week. It's just such a very, very busy time right now. That is all we have time for tonight. We will be back tomorrow with plenty more from the Olympics. We'll also be previewing the lines and looking ahead to those big European League of Ireland games. Tara Stewart is up next.